Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I am unwilling to give up, that I will start over from scratch as many times as it takes to get where I want to be.
You just want to make sure you will get knocked down, but just make sure you don't get knocked out.
So your only choice should be go focus on what you can control.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Kara Golden Show. Join me each week for inspiring conversations with some of the world's greatest leaders. We'll talk with founders, entrepreneurs, CEOs, and really some of the most interesting people of our time. Can't wait to get started. Let's go. Hi, everyone. It's Kara Golden from The Kara Golden Show, and I am so thrilled to have my next guest here. We have Janet Liriano, who is the co-founder and CEO of an incredible brand that if you don't know about, you're going to be so excited to hear about it and also taste it, hopefully sooner rather than later. It's a brand called Inaru, and you must know about it. So Inaru is the only vertically integrated profit-sharing chocolate brand and factory in the Dominican Republic, and redefining equitable pay, food security, and climate resilience through the love of chocolate. And Inaru is proud to be the only brand that shares profit with its farmers in the Dominican Republic. Inaru is so yummy, as I mentioned. They are just kind of getting going, so it might be a little hard to find, but you can definitely get it online and feel good about knowing that you're supporting something really, really incredible. So I can't wait to talk to Janet more about her incredible company that she started. And so welcome, Janet.
Thank you, Kara. I'm so excited to be here and for that beautiful introduction. I'm excited to chat all things Inaru, journeys, all the fun stuff.
So good. I had heard about your story. I had not tried your product and then got a chance to try it, and I was just blown away. I mean, what an incredible job. And tell me a little bit about what is the backstory on the brand.
Sure. I co-founded this company with my sister, Erica Liriano. So it's a sister-owned business. We're born and raised New Yorkers from Queens. The backstory is an interesting one. My father owns a cocoa farm in the Dominican Republic. Both of my parents are from the Dominican Republic, and they moved to the States right before we were born. So we grew up hearing about cacao and like all of the greatness of the cacao that comes out of the Dominican Republic. And for listeners that may not be familiar, cacao is the fruit that creates chocolate. So cacao is the fruit. And once you dry it and roast it and process it, it becomes cocoa. And then that lovely cocoa turns into chocolate or many other things. So, you know, it was always in our family, but Erica and I both worked in tech and venture. We weren't in the business, the family business of selling cacao. But our father always challenged us to think about how we could apply everything that we were learning and doing in the U.S. as entrepreneurs to think of a creative solution in the Dominican Republic. Because what a lot of listeners may not know is that the Dominican Republic accounts for the majority of organic cocoa consumed worldwide. So the majority of cocoa is produced in West Africa, but organic cocoa, fine flavor cocoa, actually comes from the Dominican Republic and Ecuador. So, you know, it was interesting to us to realize that our small island has such a meaningful impact in the chocolate industry and how we could innovate in that space. So origin story kind of has a long history of, you know, being in the family. But it was really a challenge from our father to think about how we could apply our values in business to build something in the Dominican Republic.
Thinking about what's for dinner, but you haven't had a minute to even think about it before now? Well, let's not make that mistake again. I have a tip for you. Factor. Stress-free, delicious, ready-to-eat meals, just perfect for spring and summer yumminess. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef crafted, dietitian approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes or less. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options: keto, vegan, veggie, or calorie smart. Factor has you covered. Discover more than 60 add-ons every week too, like breakfast and on-the-go lunch choices. Snacks and beverages now too. Stay fueled and feel good all day long with whatever they are creating over at Factor for you. And the best part, each meal is ready to eat in just 2 minutes or less. And who wouldn't want that? Factor is your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. Get started today and fuel up for your spring and summer goals. What are you waiting for? Head to factormeals.com/golden50 and use code golden50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code golden50 at factormeals.com/golden50 to get 50% off plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. That's code golden50 at factormeals.com/golden50 to get 50% off plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. How often have you thought about learning a new language only to be stopped by that memory of yours from the last time you tried to learn a language when it didn't go so well? Okay, maybe it wasn't a language that you were interested in learning, or perhaps all those poorly written textbooks in your sixth grade class weren't that well written after all. I have a great tip for you. It's called Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program around, available on desktop or app. No matter where you choose to learn it or what platform you choose to learn on, Rosetta Stone works, and it truly immerses you in the language you choose to learn, quicker and easier than you ever imagined to. Maybe you're getting ready to travel abroad this summer and you want to learn a bit of Portuguese, let's say, before your trip. Rosetta Stone can help. I know this firsthand as I did just this before traveling to Portugal last year. I learned Portuguese through Rosetta Stone, and by doing so, I not only got a better grasp of the spoken language of Portugal, but it got me very excited for the trip itself before I went. They even have a true accent feature that gives you feedback on your pronunciation as you are learning too. They've got you covered. Rosetta Stone's trusted experts are the real deal. They've been helping people just like you for over 30 years, helping millions of people to learn Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, Arabic, Polish, and my favorite, Portuguese. The lessons are 5 to 10 minutes long and include practical exercises so that you can pick up the language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. No English translations either, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in the language you are focused on, helping you get the long-term retention you are looking for. And who wouldn't want that? Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, the Kara Golden Show listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today today.
So what were you doing before this?
So I always joke around that if somebody were to like track my journey as an entrepreneur, they'd be like, who is this person? So before you know it, I worked at a biopharma. I worked at a Cambrian biopharma in New York. I was the first employee and chief of staff, clearly very related. Prior to that, I worked in a men's skincare company with an investor. I was the COO there and set up the supply chain. Prior to that, I was the CEO of a textile circuitry company for 4 years. Called Lumia. I have 6 patents in my name, so drove a lot of technology development. So 3 very, very different, 4, I guess, very different journeys as an entrepreneur. But what I would say the through line is I love supply chains. I really like complex infrastructure challenges. I know that doesn't sound like a normal thing to like, but I really believe that if you build a system solution, there's a lot of value. to be had. So the through line, I think, as an entrepreneur has been, I like to be where the sticky stuff is. Like, where is it challenging? That's where I like to be.
I love it. I love that you've gone full circle kind of back to not exactly what your dad was doing, but, you know, kind of had a little bit of familiarity with the industry. But then you decided to go back there after doing some other things. So my dad was actually, I call him a frustrated entrepreneur because he worked in a large company and had developed a brand called Healthy Choice inside of Armour Food Company. And never in a million years did he think that I would become an entrepreneur, and I didn't either. And certainly not in the food industry, but I think it just goes to show you this, you know, the learnings that happen, and, you know, you start to pay attention later on in life about things that are meaningful and interesting. So for those who are unfamiliar with the industry, you talked a little bit about cacao, but what do typical chocolate bars, what are they made up of?
I think I'll answer the chocolate bar question, and then I'll talk a little bit about how the world moves food. So a chocolate bar today will be, in many cases, primarily sugar, oftentimes soy lecithins or emulsifiers, some amount of cocoa. So like a milk chocolate bar usually has like over 50% milk powder and sugar. And then the balance could be emulsifiers and soy and then some cocoa. Finer chocolates will have more cocoa content. So more of the actual, you know, chocolate creating ingredient, lots of sugar often, and maybe less of the additives. And most of the chocolate in the world is processed in either Europe and now more increasingly Southeast Asia, some processing also in the United States, but all of the cocoa in the world comes from the equatorial belt. So many countries in West Africa, many countries across the equator, many countries in Latin America, but nearly all of the branded products are produced overseas. You know, when cocoa was discovered at scale by the Spaniards in their, you know, journey to the New World, they fell in love with it. And what a lot of folks may or may not know is that cocoa at that time was worth more than gold for the indigenous communities here in Latin America. It was a very tradable, precious thing. And it continues to be a tradable and precious thing now, but on a global scale. So that's the journey of chocolate.
And so, but how are, you know, the typical chocolate bars that you see sitting up on, you know, at the cash register that you buy, that is significantly less expensive, tastes very different than yours. I mean, is that in terms of quality, are those, you know, not as, in terms of ingredients, like what is kind of the big difference?
Yeah, I would say, you know, I would call those products candy. And in many places, they're not even called chocolate. It's like a chocolate-like candy, or like a chocolatey candy is like the technical classification. In terms of health, and, you know, and thankfully you're starting to see consumers become more aware of this. Most of these, you know, products have very little cocoa content, and the cocoa that's in there is often not tested for heavy metals, is grown using, you know, quite a lot of, you know, chemicals and pesticides and all of these things that the cocoa itself will absorb, and an enormous amount of sugar. So when you think about the health impacts of that, it's like crazy insulin spikes, cortisol levels through the roof. Your body's absorbing all kinds of Frankenfood, which is, you know, what we call it at Inaru, all of these ingredients to give you this smooth chocolatey feel that in fact, higher quality chocolate products naturally have because they don't take out the cocoa butter. So, you know, I always say that there's no such thing as a discount. Like if you pay a dollar for a chocolate bar, you're actually paying with your health. And you're also paying with environmental damage. You're paying with economic harm. The price must be paid, right? Like the value of something will come due the bill. So, you know, while it's easy and I'm not going to pretend like I've never eaten like a dollar chocolate bar. I grew up eating all of the same delicious sweets as a kid. And chocolate is so wonderful because of all of those common memories. But I think we're seeing the impact, right? In many different ways from a health perspective.
Definitely. So you had incredible experience, unique experience, which as I always say, it's the people that come from outside of the industry that are really going to shake up category or an industry overall. Do you remember the moment when you decided it's time to start an Aru? Maybe you didn't have the name quite yet, but you were like, I'm going to go do this. This is like, has always been something I go to sleep with, wake up with, not always, but, you know, most recently, and you have got to make this choice. And do you remember the moment when you decided, I got to go do this?
I do. So one thing, I have to give a shout out to my lovely sister, Erica, my younger sister, who's my co-founder. She had super conviction about doing this a year before I had sufficient data and analysis to be like, all right, we've got a really good business plan. Like, you know, she did the early diligencing with the farmers and was like, we got to do this. I was like, I need a year of close study. So first, Erica's moment of conviction was definitely before me. But I actually think the moment of conviction for me, funnily enough, this is like a strange story that I've yet to tell. So I'm a very big fan of this one band that comes out of Korea, BTS, which is like, nobody knows how this is related to the business, but I was listening to one of their songs and I'm like sitting on my couch. I'm doing work for this other company that I was working at the time. And the song basically challenges you to like really be who you are and like follow your instincts and trust yourself. And it felt like a very personal moment of like, if I really was going to be my authentic self and create and lead authentically, I'd be doing an art. I would be doing this thing that I want to do. I would be showing myself in this way. So it was actually this like moment of music while I was like kind of hesitating as a person in terms of where am I going to find the courage to take this next step in my career? You know, am I going to be who I really want to be? Am I brave enough? That was actually, it was a K-pop song playing in the background. I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. So that was the moment
for
me.
That's so funny.
It's totally random, but that's the truth.
And so did you have a business plan or did you, I guess, you know, with your co-founder sister, you were both sort of dividing and conquering on this. How did you decide, okay, what's the first step? How many SKUs? What were the SKUs? All of those things.
I love this question. So, you know, there was many ways and in some ways, simpler ways that we could have built this business. So the short answer is, did we have a business plan? Yes. We spent about 6 months doing very serious research into the existing cocoa commodity supply chain to explain to our listeners, Inaru built a 7,000 square foot factory that processes all of the product here in the country. We own a factory. We like built it from dirt, like from zero to this state-of-the-art facility. And, you know, we didn't necessarily need to do that. We could have sourced cocoa and contract manufactured out the product with an existing facility somewhere else. But we really felt it was going to be critically important from a brand value perspective and a stewardship perspective and really being able to be a resilient business in a changing climate to have the factory in the country of origin, to be able to have those direct relationships. So it was a really tough business case to make for investors. Like, why do you need a factory? Like, why is this important? Mm-hmm. There's millions of chocolate brands that just don't do that. This is like a massive expense. And we really needed to kind of convince folks that 5 years from now, having a factory at origin is going to be so strategic. And while we could build a really great brand and focus on the SKUs first, we actually need to focus on the supply because that is where the industry is going to see tremendous volatility. And to quickly summarize, today, the price of a ton of cocoa is $6,000. That's way more than it's ever been in the last 30 years. And we knew that was coming. We saw that 5 years ago. We're like, cocoa is going to skyrocket and everyone is going to be scrambling to source at the source. So while no one sees the need now, there's going to be a need later. And that's actually, we were really focused on the infrastructure and almost like the brand came second, which is why the products are like now coming out because we're really focused on supply security, which I think is an unusual way that a consumer brand is built. I wanted to clarify that a little bit.
No, I think that makes tons of sense. I remember when coconut water was first coming out, and there were a few different brands. Some of those brands have gone out of business and some of them have stuck around. But I remember that the supply chain and actually running out of coconuts in certain countries was like a massive problem. And so they had to go to other countries and they had to grow. And, you know, it was, I remember hearing it. We didn't have coconut and hint, but it was, supply chain is such a critical thing. And certainly we saw that with the pandemic, even being able to really understand that front to back as you do. That's incredible. How has your product, your product is not very old because you, as you just mentioned, you were focusing on the infrastructure part of it first before even getting it launched. But are there any significant changes? I always share with new entrepreneurs that just get your product out there. And there may be mm-hmm. things that you're going to want to change. We've heard from people in different industries, like the frozen industry, that they've had clear windows when for their product that goes in a frozen case. And that's a really bad idea because you see all these ice crystals and you can't actually see the product at all. And so that was a bad mistake. According to this brand. So again, I think there are so many things that people learn once the consumer can actually touch the product. Is there anything that you've seen that is like you had to pivot or shift in some way, whether it's packaging or who your consumer was?
I really appreciate this. Yes. So several, I on the one hand, I want to give the product team credit. They were kind of bang on for where the trends were going. And Inaru as a brand, it's like, we're vegan, we're gluten-free, we're emulsifier-free. We very much are taking the nutritive approach to chocolate. Like, chocolate can be a luxurious experience, but it can be an accessible experience. I think in terms of where we needed to pivot, there's a polarization that happens with the chocolate consumer. There are folks that are looking for something milky and sweet, and that's most of the market that consumes chocolate. And then there's the folks that polarize on the dark. And, you know, as a brand, we kind of had to decide, what space are we playing in, right? Are we the 100% dark bar, polyphenols through the roof, are we going to put all of the health attributes? Like, you have to make a decision, because when you're a brand like Inaru, it's so tempting to like want to tell every story. And mm-hmm. I think one of the biggest challenges in the beginning was like, okay, the brand as a company has all of these amazing attributes, but at the end of the day, the customer is going to make a snap decision. Am I going to buy this mm-hmm. or not? And, mm-hmm. How are we going to make ourselves distinct? And I'm actually going to quickly show for those who are not watching, but this is a product that's coming out, which is a beverage. It's a cocoa beverage, but all of our branding has this like very simple Inaru, the logo, and it's like, rich colors. And what we decided to do, which was a bit unconventional, was not tell the story on the front of the package, to let the beauty and the mystery speak for itself. Because on a shelf with many bars that have a bunch of different logos and labels and USDA, this, that, 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 that let folks be compelled by the fact that it looks quite beautiful and quite different. And then when they flip the back of the product, the cleanliness of the ingredients, like really creating an intrigue was the angle that we took with our packaging. Because at first it was just way too crowded. It was like, do I care that it's from the DR, or do I care that it's woman owned, or do I care that it's organic, or do I care that it's like free of all, like, what am I looking at? It's can be distressing for a consumer. So I think we made a very unusual decision to go very simple with the packaging, because there's so much storytelling that happens traditionally in our space. And that's been working well for us. It's like the thing we get the best feedback on. It's like, this looks beautiful. People love it in their stores. The customer loves to have it on their coffee table and they want to learn more. But it was a risky bet because we kind of felt like maybe we need to tell more of the story on the packaging. So that's one example.
Well, the packaging is beautiful, by the way. I mean, it's stunning. And I think that it grabs you when you people, and I think it's not just, in your category, but I think it's in general, you know, great art on something really seems to stand out. So I really do appreciate it. And simplicity, that's what else I saw on your brand that was so beautiful. What is the SKU that is kind of the runaway bestseller? Do you have one, or that's yes. one that that is the go-to?
And I also want to share with your audience, we have a bunch of new SKUs coming online. So Inari does a seasonal approach to products. So we had our winter flavors, the winter 23, and we're about to launch our spring summer. And then we'll be doing fall winter again in September. But the SKU that performed the best, well, we had truffles, which sold out pretty immediately. And we're reintroducing bonbons in April. So keep an eye out for that. But right now, the vanilla and chamomile bar, it's kind of so neck good. And neck with the vanilla chamomile. People love that bar. And then the other bar that's like a close second is the Aoyama cranberry, the pumpkin seed cranberry one, for like the texture, because pumpkin seed is a very unusual crunch to get in a bar. Like there, we have super fans of both of those bars. But the vanilla chamomile, I would say, outperforms the other one significantly.
It's so delicious. So you guys are doing so much to not only, help the farmers and the growers. You've got a great tasting product. You're sort of showing that you can do a lot of really great things. What do you think is really difficult to get kind of credit for, right? With the consumer. Mm. For example, when we launched Hint, I wanted a product that didn't have sweeteners in it, but didn't have preservatives in it, all the great ingredients in it. And, but the front end marketing of the product is simplicity, right? It just has to taste good. But this was very important, not to all consumers, but to some consumers, right? And is there anything in particular that you feel like you're really proud of? Because it was hard to do, I guess, setting up manufacturing and doing things a little bit differently and, really thinking through things. That's something that not all brands do, right? They slap things together, they private label things, whatever. But you guys are really you're creating it from scratch. Yeah, completely, yeah. Which is so cool.
Thank you. I think that's such a great question. I really want to give you a thoughtful answer. I think that truly being a vertical business, so many folks say bean to bar, and from an art perspective, from a craft perspective, it's true, right? They're importing the beans and they're making your bar. I say that, Inari is seed to shelf in some ways. We're seed to bar, we're mm-hmm. at the farm. We spent truly 2 years building producer relationships, being in the community several times a week, working together with our farmers to determine what are the contract terms? How do we guarantee their pay? Like transforming the local supply chain. Like this is something that's a long story to tell to a customer. And ultimately the thing that they care about is it true that you profit share? How do you know there's no heavy metals? We test every batch. That's how we know. How can we test? Because we have the relationships in the country. Like they want the soundbite benefit of profit sharing. This product is safe and it's super tasty. But that 2 years of literally building the business model with the farmers that gets a benefit from our commercial success, and how directly that commercial success for Inari translates into their communities is something that I really am proud of. And how proud the farmers are of that they know where their beans are going. Like this is a crazy stat. Most cocoa farmers in the world have never tasted chocolate, or they don't even know what happens yeah. to those beans. Like they just, when I think about that and that, hundreds of farmers in our community have been able to see the product, taste the product, have been paid super well for the product, and they built that contract flow with us. It's something that makes me really, really proud. But it's hard to put all of that on a bar, we spent 2 years yeah. building the business model with the farmers, that would be
that
the
is
thing.
So, that's so cool. So what strategies have you deployed to kind of build the community and let people know about Inari, but also, how to get their hands on it? I mean, I know you're just now getting into a lot of retailers and different spots along the way, and obviously you're available online, but what is kind of working to get it out there?
So we One of the beautiful things about having a great product, so to the listeners, go check some out. We send samples to literally everybody, right? If somebody sends us a DM, we send them a sample, right? Like, you know, we reach out to the folks that we want to reach out to from a distributor perspective. And what we have seen is, like, once someone tries a product, they really want to carry it. They want to have it. They want to buy it. We have a very high retention rate of a customer once they've purchased. So what we're doing now in terms of expanding our reach, because one thing I do want to clarify as well, Inaru is a consumer product, but we also sell the semi-finished ingredient to other brands. So a very meaningful part of our business, and actually the majority of our revenue, comes from selling branded ingredients to other chocolate makers, to other folks that source cocoa ingredients. So we have a pretty interestingly, I like to call it a de-risked business model, where other brands get to benefit from our sourcing story because they get to have Inaru cacao in their product. They get to all of the goodness that Inaru does. They can also benefit from having that in their ingredients. So we, on the B2B side, we've seen very strong success just by getting the product out there and giving them really good partner marketing collateral. And this year on the direct-to-consumer side, people want you to talk to them. So what I'm finding is, like, that immediate responsiveness. I respond to nearly all of our DMs personally. You know, we send product to, you know, retailers, and I'm finding that that very hand-to-hand versus, like, relying strictly on technology creates a very sticky recurring community that we want to grow in what is, I want to call it, an organic way. Maybe some folks would say that's bad growth hacking, but the retention is stronger. So we're just scaling those, the sense of personalization.
So what's the most challenging aspect of building a company? You've worked on many other businesses and supported entrepreneurs. Now you and your sister are, you know, running it, right? There's the buck stops with you guys on the problems. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs don't realize it until they're in your seat. What is kind of the most challenging aspect of that?
I know a lot of people talk about how important personal growth is as a leader, but I really think people do not make the critical investments necessary in emotional development to manage the stress of the role and the responsibility of stewarding other people and, you know, their jobs are on the line. Like, how do you manage that pressure? I think one of the hardest things is not internalizing the fact that you made a bad call or a mistake and, like, disempowering yourself for future choices, right? Like, we all make mistakes in the journey. And it's important to learn from them, but to not flagellate yourself, to not take your courage away when you need to deal with the consequence of a bad decision. I think that has probably been one of the inner things that has been really difficult, especially as, I'll speak for myself, as a woman entrepreneur, you know, you feel like you have to be perfect all the time. You can't make a mistake. You know, the standards are completely different, you know, and when you do, the tension that you can put on yourself to then, you can lose your confidence and then over consult and then make bad decisions because you didn't trust yourself because you made one mistake that one time. I don't know if this is clear, but I feel like that journey in particular has been really difficult for both of us to like calibrate properly on that, you know, not easy.
Yeah. And it's not that you don't have incredible experience, right? It's just that you don't have anybody to go to, right? To say, like, here, this is your problem. You need to, you know, you've got to manage it.
It's a lot of pressure. You're not always going to fix it right. Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. I was going to say probably some of the best phone calls or emails that I've gotten are from people who worked for me over the years, and then they would go and start a business years later. And then they'd write to me, and this happens all the time, where they're like, I never really realized exactly how hard it was. So on those days when, you were, you know, looking up at the sky or you were stressed out or whatever. Like, I get it now, you know, and when people don't give proper notice or, you know, all of a sudden you have to kind of like turn on a dime, you're just like, oh my God, what are we going to do? And I've had so many of those emails over the years and I'm like, you know, we're all good. Like this is, but it is, it's hard. It's hard to explain it to people too, you know, especially when you're in it. Because mm-hmm. to your point, you want to lead with positivity and, you know, and say it's going to be okay. And then you've got this, this little person in your brain saying like, maybe it's not going to be okay. And you're like, no, it is, it's going to be fine. So I get it.
It's exactly that. So you want to make sure you're not being delusional with your confidence and your positivity, because mm-hmm. that's important, right? You have to calibrate for risk well. But it's tough for human beings, and it's also very lonely. Like at the end of it all, like it's a beautiful journey. I'm so grateful to have a wonderful partner. Obviously, working with family brings its own complexity, but it's at the end of the day, it's a lonely road. It's a lonely, lonely road. So having, you know, a really good community of people around you, people say this all the time, but it's actually really important. Having a good community that has compassion and grace for the emotionality that happens in running a business like this, like when the runway is shorter than you needed to be, when that investor that was going to invest backed out at the last minute, when this mm-hmm. order totally took a left turn, when this stuff goes the way that it goes, like, your nervous system needs people it could just be a human with, right? So I would say your employees can't be that. And that's an important thing. So like building that community where I can be a human being running this company has been the best investment that I've made. You need it. You need it.
Definitely. So best advice for founders or someone thinking about starting their own company?
Be extremely clear on the why for yourself and the why for the others you serve. It has to be clear to you. Because if you don't know why, you won't know what or where when you're in the middle of it all. I think that people get very enamored with the what they're doing and not mm-hmm. the why. So that's like my strongest bit of advice is sit with yourself and have a clear answer for that.
Janet Lariano, co-founder and CEO of Inaru, thank you so much for coming on. And we'll have all the info in the show notes, but so inspiring. It's I'm so excited for you and good luck with everything.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again for listening to The Kara Golden Show. If you would, please give us a review and feel free to share this podcast with others who would benefit. And of course, feel free to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode of our podcast. Just a reminder that I can be found on all platforms at Kara Golden. I would love to hear from you too, so feel free to DM me. And if you want to hear more about my journey, I hope you will have a listen or pick up a copy of my Wall Street Journal best-selling book, Undaunted, where I share more about my journey, including founding and building Hint. We are here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Thanks for listening and goodbye for now.